The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine. So much more than a producer. Still to come this hour, Wes Reynolds, Chris Velika standing by to talk Derby and Preakness with us, and of course, we got to talk Warriors-Lakers. My goodness, the second of the two games tonight. Real quick, RIP to Vida Blue. Vida Blue, who passed away at the age of 73. His most famous season, 1971. He won the American League Cy Young Award, MVP as well, after going 24-8 with a 1.82 ERA, 301 strikeouts that year, 24 complete games, 8 of them shutouts. Remains just among just 11 pitchers to win both MVP and Cy Young in the same season. And for his career, 3.27 ERA, 2,175 strikeouts, 143 complete games, and 37 shutouts over 17 seasons with the A's, the Giants, and the Royals. And Roxy Roxborough, who the legendary founder of Las Vegas Sports Consultants, tweeted the gambling sort of tie-in. Vida Blue, or Vitamin Blue, as he said they called him in the sports books, he could bring it when he was in dead stroke, pitching in the A's night games. He forced bookmakers to use over-unders of 7. That was groundbreaking then, he said. So Vida Blue may rest in peace at the age of 73. Let's talk a little horse racing. The Derby is behind us, the first of the 3 Triple Crown races. Mage, congratulations to everybody who had Mage 15-1. To win it, Chris Velika joins us, the Bear from Fox Sports. Oh, we get to see him. How you doing, yes. Chris? How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. How about you? How was your week?
It was great, man. I just wanted to ask you this first before we get to your thoughts on that race and what you're thinking about the Preakness and beyond. And I know this gets into a little bit of an uncomfortable territory, but I feel like if we ignore it, it's more awkward than you know, not acknowledging it all. So this is the thing. 7 horses die in the run-up to the Kentucky Derby. But we've seen this before, right? Remember there was the Santa Anita deal a couple years ago where 30-plus horses died, and I think Aqueduct had it. Is it. By the way, at the same time Santa Anita had so many horses pass away, the state of New York had like 100 horses that passed away. And I know there's reporting laws in certain jurisdictions that don't exist in others. I guess my question on that is, real quick, because it's on horse racing's biggest stage, does this have any lingering effect in any way, or is this just going to be like everything else and we're just going to move on?
I think it'll be like everything else and move on. I mean, to put it as unkindly as possible, like we saw if what was going on at Santa Anita didn't have a super effect, like where we still think about that every day. I don't think this will. I think what happened here, being that it was magnified because it was Derby week, and I think you saw as a result, horses getting scratched from the Kentucky Derby, because I think they realized if the Kentucky Derby favorite Forte, who was scratched because of a foot injury, or a minor foot injury or whatever it was, something happens to him in the Kentucky Derby and they have to put that horse down, then you've got a big problem, and the sport may never recover from that. But I think you saw with the incidents with Safi Joseph's barn and his horses getting scratched all across the card, and the other horses spiking a fever and the foot injury getting scratched. I think they took every extra ounce of precaution this week to make sure that the Derby itself, nothing was going to happen where people who don't necessarily watch horse racing every day would have seen something potentially terrible.
Yeah, and I guess it's a truism that the bigger the purses get, that the more risks will be taken with horses. That's just how this is going to go?
Well, I think the less risks are, I think that that's shown. I mean, the owner, Michael Rapoli, I mean, he was livid that Forte got scratched on Saturday by the stewards. And I think the state vets and the stewards were the ones taking their precautions. And the owner, obviously, the Kentucky Derby, it's the one race where it's like once in a lifetime, you're going to run in that race. So he lost that opportunity. He wanted to run by the sound of things, but the stewards and the vets wouldn't allow him. So I think what you saw was the industry itself kind of maybe, you know how we say, like in college football, like got to protect the player, got to save the players from themselves sometimes, where maybe the grass isn't green around the other side and they transfer. I think maybe the checks and balances here worked out where maybe the state vets and the stewards might have saved the Rapoli and the Forte connections from themselves by scratching the horse.
Yeah, Rich Strike won the Derby 80-1 last year. I just, you know, you would think that based on the history of both horses, Rich Strike last year and obviously Mage this year, both just coming out of sort of horse racing nowhere, if you will, that the story would have been as big. And I feel like it sort of got tarnished this year. You did not have Mage. Who did you have?
Yeah, I my top pick was Skinner. And he got scratched on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought that up because this is something that I wanted to bring up. Like, unlike the Milwaukee Bucks, I failed in my job. It was an unsuccessful season in the Triple Crown season to kick it off with the Derby. I didn't do a good job of going back after my top pick was scratched and basically starting from zero and re-handicapping everything. I had made some exact box, but it was certainly not my top pick. And I even said on Saturday, like, the beauty of the parimutuel field, in parimutuel betting rather, is at one point on Saturday, Reincarnate, who had zero shot, he was 50-1 in the morning line. He had no shot. He was shorter than Mage, and it was inexcusable. And those are the types of opportunities in a parimutuel type betting system where you can take advantage of the stupidity of the betting public. And I think in this instance, a lot of people did. I didn't. I'm kind of mad at myself because I might have even said it with JVT on Friday. I did so many things on Friday. I can't remember who exactly I was talking to. I know with Marco and Kiev on the Odds Breakers, we definitely brought it up. Like, if Forte was 7-2 on the morning line in the favorite and Mage was 15, 18, 20-1, whatever he was in the morning line, if you looked at the Florida Derby, there was no way Mage should have been four times the price that Forte was. Mage looked like a winner in the stretch, and he just got passed by Forte late. He was a little short. Maybe he moved a little early. It was only his third lifetime start. And I said, of those two horses, don't you have to like Mage more than Forte moving forward? Now, did I put a nice chunk of change on Mage to win on the nose? No, of course I didn't. I didn't even listen to myself. But like, I handicapped the race correctly in that sense amongst those two horses, but I just didn't ultimately bet it right.
By the way, shout out to Johnny Avello, who I believe had a 100-1 ticket on Mage. That's what I'm hearing.
Good
on that.
Him.
Yeah, so good for Johnny. So we don't have obviously the odds here on the Preakness, but what do you expect? Mage is about 4-1-ish, somewhere in that vicinity.
I would think it's going to be interesting if he is the favorite or not. I think there are a lot of people coming out of the Derby that think maybe Two Phils ran the best race. He was the only survivor of the horses that were close to that pace up front, and he hung on for second and held off Angel of Empire. So I think it'll be interesting if Two Phils does go favorite or co-favored. I think there are an interesting horse named First Mission, who won the Lexington from Brad Cox. He's going to get a ton of support. I think there's an interesting horse from Chad Brown, Blazing Sevens, who ran, I believe it was in the Bluegrass. Chad was very honest before that race. He said he really thought he needed the race and was going to point him to the Preakness. But I think there certainly are some newcomers in the Preakness that might give Mage a little bit of a run for his money here in this race. Some couple of fresh horses and Two Phils as well, if he's able to get a little bit better trip than he did in the Derby.
Forte's going to run in the Preakness.
That's the plan, and that's interesting because usually, yeah, Todd Pletcher does not send his horses to the Preakness. He usually goes Derby, skip Preakness, Belmont. But I think it shows that Rapoli really wants to win a Triple Crown race, and maybe that this race is more suited to Forte than the Belmont certainly was. Speaking of the Belmont, we know how we talked about this in the past. It's certainly interesting to see if both Kings Barnes and Tappet Trice run in the Belmont, because that's, as I said, Todd Fletcher's MO. He loves the Belmont track. He loves the surface. He loves pieces of horses there. Tappet Trice and Kings Barnes, I think, will be two horses to certainly look at with kind of that grinding running style in that race.
Okay, because I remember you called Taprit, was it a few years back for the Belmont before the Derby? Okay, yeah. So you've made your call for the Belmont. So let me just distill again for the Preakness. Then what am I hearing you're thinking about without?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to see how the race pans out. I think Mage has an excellent chance to win, but I think Mage, First Mission, Two Phils, probably one of those three are the most likely winners of that race.
Okay. And then the obvious question that needs to be asked every year, Mage wins the Derby. Mage is the horse that could win the Triple Crown, the only one obviously mm-hmm. that could. What price would you need if someone posted that right now to bet Mage to win the Triple Crown?
Well, you figure he'll probably be 7-2 or so in the Preakness, and then all the vanity tickets in the Belmont, he'll go off at 3-5 or whatever. I'd need at least double digits. I'd need at least 10-1. So I think the two race combo here is going to be pretty tough for him. For a horse who's only run 4 times in his life.
Okay. Appreciate it. Chris, always
good. Can I get into one thing real fast? Please. We got music playing?
No, go ahead. We got a minute.
No, I was going to say, if you want to look at soccer, EPL, I didn't really look into this as a Liverpool guy until Manchester United dropped a couple games. But I think now there's a real chance Liverpool somehow does this and gets into the top four. I mean, they have 3 games left. They play Leicester, who's 16th in the table. They host Aston Villa, who's 8th, and then they go to Southampton to finish, who's going to get relegated. Manchester United is going to need to win three games from their final four. They got Wolves at home, at Bournemouth, home Chelsea, home Fulham. Like, they have to win 3 of those, or else there's a good chance they're going to wind up at 70. They win 2 and draw 2, they'll get 8 points out of that. They sit on 71. Liverpool wins those 3 final games, they're sitting on 71. Liverpool has the massive edge in goal differential. Like, this is something a couple of weeks ago you probably could have gotten a massive number on Liverpool to finish in the top four. I think it's around 2-1 right now, but I would expect United to beat Wolves and beat Bournemouth, but are they going to beat both Chelsea and Fulham? I don't know. Like, it's a definite 50-50 coin flip now, I think, whether United gets the 3 wins and holds off Liverpool.
We're seeing plus 180 on that, Kelly. Plus 180 on that.
Yeah, I'd take a stab at that.
Liverpool a point out with 3 games left, a point out behind Man United, which has 4 games left. Thank you, Chris. Lakers, Warriors next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Split bets.
Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? Well, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes. So you can see changes in all the action, find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets, and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out. All of today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, if you're invited to a dog's birthday party and you're out of town and can't go, do I still purchase the dog a gift?
Yeah, sure. Maybe a small one.
Just curious what the protocol is.
I think you're okay.
You think I'm okay?
Yeah, I think you're okay.
All right. By the way, pro tip. Can we do the pro tip? Let's do a pro tip. Pro tip of the hour. I was mentioning this earlier. We're talking about Stephen A., some of the stuff he says at halftimes of these games. Remember, shooting percentages regress towards the mean often. Keep that in mind for NBA live betting. Just because a mainstream media personality says, well, I'd be a lot more worried if Jason Tatum was having a good game, you should be thinking the opposite. Because he's 1 of 9 and the Celtics are down only 9, maybe you should have the opposite instinct. Just keep in mind shooting percentages. When the larger sample size tells you otherwise, don't let the smaller sample size overcome your thinking. That's your VSiN pro tip of the hour, pro tip of the show. All of them sortable at VSiN.com. Lakers and Warriors, game 2 tonight of the NBA doubleheader. Love this round where it's, with the exception of the 2 single night, you know, single game nights last week, now it's every other night, 2 games a night. And we have 2 series that are now at 2 games apiece. We'll see if the Knicks can knot things up with the Heat. We'll see if the Warriors can knot things up with the Lakers. Obviously, the Heat and the Lakers trying to get ahead 3-1. Remember, in both the case of the Knicks and the Warriors, even if they're down 3-1, they would have 2 of the remaining potential 3 at home, games 5 and 7. But still, you don't want to be down 3-1. The Lakers are 3-point favorites in this game tonight, game 4. 228 is your total. First things first, Kelly, I'm watching Austin Reeves this entire postseason, and I'm thinking to myself, who does this guy look like? It is driving me crazy.
Oh boy.
Who does he look like the whole time? And finally, I realized it.
What'd you come up with?
Finally, I realized it. Austin Reeves was so bummed in Ferris Bueller's Day Off when his dad's Ferrari got destroyed. So bummed.
That's a great pull.
So bummed. I still feel bad for him.
You couldn't remember because he's wearing a Lakers jersey and not a Red Wings.
And a Red Wings jersey. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So there's that. Finally got over what that confusion was about. The other thing about
this—that's great.
The other thing about this series is, and I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, but do you ever remember the first three games of any series that has been this schizophrenic, and even within games themselves, than this Lakers-Warriors series, which this is where I really do say, getting back to the sort of mainstream media reaction to this stuff, you've got to resist the urge to just come up with superlatives. By the way, let me just raise my hand also. We all can be guilty of this. After game one, and AD had a tremendous game in game one where he scored 30, he had 23 boards, and the Lakers won, remember, despite that furious 14-0 Warriors burst that tied the game late, and then the Lakers won it by five. But remember, the narrative after game one was the Warriors simply don't have anybody to check Anthony Davis. By the way, I think that might still be true. Here is a look, again, of Anthony Davis's roller coaster postseason box scores. Look at this. 22. They're going back to the Memphis series. These are point totals. 22, 13, 31, 12. 31, 16, 30, 11, 25 in this past game. I mean, it's just, first of all, I don't know how this is possible. I just don't know how this is possible. So after game one, the Warriors will have no way to stop Anthony Davis. After game two, remember the Warriors won that by 27 after trailing by seven after the first quarter. AD ends up with 11 points and seven boards. Part of that, of course, was that the Lakers just decided to sit everybody in the fourth quarter, and probably smart, gets everybody some rest. That was the game that Klay had 30 on 8 of 11 shooting from 3. Dubs had a 41-point second quarter, 43 points third quarter. You get the idea. And then there was game 3 where the Dubs were down 7. They closed the first quarter on a 28-14 run. They're up 7. And at that point in game 3, some of us were, I'll be honest, we're like, oh, I have the Warriors in 6. I'm a little worried that it doesn't get to 6. And then the Lakers destroy them. Absolutely destroy the Warriors the rest of the way. Literally AD with 25 and 13 in that game. But the Lakers closed the first half on a 30-8 run. The final score was 127-97. So essentially from the Warriors being up 40-29, they were up 11, to the Lakers being up at the end of the game, it was a 98-57 shellacking. Warriors had 11 more shots, made 6 fewer. Warriors had 13 more 3 attempts, made 2 fewer. Warriors had 20 fewer free throw attempts, made 16 fewer. Warriors committed 19 turnovers for 27 points. Before I get your thoughts on this, Kelly, I just want to get back to that stuff about the free throws. Because there is that. Guru, at @DrGuru_ on Twitter, putting this together. Free throws this series. Lakers 83, Warriors 39. For a difference of 44 attempts. Plus 44 free throw differential is the largest through three games of a playoff series since the Heat in 2011. That courtesy of Warriors Muse. Now, the follow-up tweet to this, and this was only done after the first two games, not after the first three, but through two games, the drives to the basket were identical. 35.1 for both teams through the first two games. Now, as a guy who has the Warriors, let me try to be really objective about this. I do not believe it's because the Warriors should have more free throw attempts. Because honestly, the way the Warriors play the game, they don't really deserve that many more free throw attempts. But on the other side, I do want to say this, and this was particularly true in Game 3. How many of those AD or LeBron drives to the basket seemed to have been adjudicated, seemed to have been whistled based on the result? So if AD or LeBron missed one of those drives, then all of a sudden there was a late whistle. That happened about 4 or 5 times.
Oh, that's an NBA thing.
It's a home team, home cooking star system thing, but it was ridiculous in game 3. So I do want to be fair about the Warriors. The Warriors don't really deserve more free throw attempts. They really don't. Maybe one or two here, but nothing of note. But I do think there is a little mishugas happening on the Lakers side.
I think it's tough. I think it's two differently designed teams, like you're talking about. Golden State Warriors, you don't really have those type of players that are going to get to the line. AD, LeBron James, when you don't really have, especially when you have not a lot of rim protection either. Quality, you know, a big man that can really stop those guys down low. They're going to pick up ticky tack fouls.
But if you're going to whistle it in the flow of the game. Don't wait to see if the ball goes in before you throw that late whistle. I mean, how many times do you see the Warriors just go like, oh, there's the whistle?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. That happens.
It's ridiculous.
That happens way more in the NBA than I think. Like, I understand this is you're in a spot where it's highlighted more now, but that happens in the NBA all the time. Is it right, Gil? I'm not saying it's right. But they do that a lot.
Listen, we all know that this is the NBA's thing. The fans are right on the court. The referees are. The officials are more influenced by the home crowd being right on top of them. This is a tried and true thing. I'm just saying that is definitely, I mean, Guru brings it up. That's definitely a noticeable thing. Plus 44 is a record, or not a record, but it's been the first time that that's happened in, you know, over a decade. So that's just something to watch. I guess as far as tonight's game is concerned, can you pre-flop any of these? Knowing, like, what is your expectation of AD? The expectation should be, well, he should show up, he should have a great game, and the Warriors should have no answer. Can you count on that?
No, you can't.
You can't. By the way, why can't you count on that? What's his problem?
I don't know, Gil. I bet over his point prop in game three. It barely got there. I'm not nearly as confident in it. I'm not as confident in it tonight, but that's how the Lakers win this series. AD has to live in the paint.
Absolutely.
Live in pick and rolls. Live around the paint. I don't even care if he's taking those jumpers, you know, that are just outside the paint that he's doing fadeaways and stuff. That's fine because the Warriors don't have anybody tall enough, lengthy enough to match up and really give Anthony Davis problems. When AD hangs out at the three-point line and Draymond can check him every time he tries to drive to the basket, that's not going to work. You have to put an AD into position where he can be effective and go over the top of a shorter defense. But it all seems to be AD, Gil. It's like when he wants to, he's fine. And when he doesn't, he chills out there at the three-point line and takes a breather.
The Warriors always do seem to find a way to figure it out. They, you know, we thought for a second it was, oh, they didn't have Looney and Draymond on the court at the same time. This solved it. Yeah, maybe not. But if you had faith in any team to figure it out, it's them.
So and this is the way I keep saying this with JVT on Hardwood Handicappers. It's weird because you're talking about a jump shooting team in the Warriors, right? To me, they have the higher floor in this matchup. The Lakers have the higher ceiling, though, because nobody can stop AD when he wants to actually be aggressive.
See, I was going to go the other way, that it should be that the Warriors should have the higher ceiling.
That's what it normally should be.
And the Lakers should have the higher floor, but that isn't how it's worked out. Going to be amazing. I won't have anything pre-flop, but I will in-game this appropriately, or try to. Coming back with Wes Reynolds.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. I'll tell you who's got the hot hand. It's Wes Reynolds, everybody.
Ooh.
In studio. Co-host of VSiN Tonight, which he does with Matt Humans at Wes Reynolds 1. That's the number one on Twitter, and I'm talking hot on fire. Is that what the kids say? Fire? They go F-I-Y-A, something like that? Wes Reynolds,
don't
everybody.
Look at me.
How you doing,
Wes? I wouldn't know what the kids say, Gil. I'm an old man now. I have no idea.
You are, if nothing else, you know exactly what the kids say, Wes. So what I'm referring to, for those who are wondering, is you not only hit an outright on Wyndham Clark to win his first PGA Tour event at the Wells Fargo Championship. By the way, what was your number on Wyndham?
75-1.
No, that's it.
And
then you also hit another. What else did you hit?
It was Adrian Meronk over at the Italian Open on the DP World Tour, 20-1. Meronk, probably one of those players in the mix to get one of those last couple Team Europe Ryder Cup spots later this fall. By the way, the Ryder Cup, where that's going to be held, is Marco Simone Golf Club, where the Italian Open was this week. So that's a pretty good case to make for Captain Luke Donald to win on that course that the Ryder Cup is going to host. So Adrian Meronk able to get home in the morning.
Oh, by the way, there's a brief aside. One of the other things I did in D.C., I grew up in D.C., I never have set foot inside Congressional Country Club. Congressional Country Club, when I was a kid, no Jews allowed. So this was the first time. My buddy Juan now has a membership. By the way, African-Americans, Jews, all members now. But I set foot inside for the first time at clay court tennis courts. It was amazing. They have the Ryder Cup there in 2027, yeah. I want to say.
Yeah.
They're, like, super excited about it already.
Remember, Congressional is when Rory McIlroy won that first major in the early 2010s, where yes. it was a wet golf course, and he just, like, slayed it, you know, once it's wet and soft.
Oh, his locker is still there.
Yeah.
He's prominently featured all throughout. But so – Let's break this down about your betting, because people are going to be like, wait a minute, he had a 70 plus to one, then he had a 20 to one, and Wes does this all the time. So these are not the only outrights you bet. You bet multiple outrights.
No, and I proportion it as well. And one of the things I've been doing more this year, for those that follow the VSiN.com Picks at a Glance and also our Long Shots podcast, available every Tuesday afternoon wherever you get your podcasts, I do the placement markets. So, you know, I do top 10s, top 20s, and I'm having to do that out here in Nevada because we, of course, do not have each-way betting. We've had this discussion many times why we don't have it out here. I have no idea. You know, it's a software issue or something, but that's what I have to do because it's like, well, I don't want to bet all outrights, and then if they don't get there, but if I, you know, have guys in the top 10 and the top 20, I at least come away with some money on the deal. So I proportion the unit size out to kind of have equal payouts based on the futures I have.
Okay. And so it also occurs to me then when I bring this up, there's going to be a portion of the audience that says, oh, well, he bets multiple, so that's why. Okay. No. It's all, you know, in the math. If you're hitting them at the rate you're hitting them at, have at it. Right?
Yeah.
It works out for you. And you have how many outrights that you've hit this year so far?
Seven so far, combining all the world tours.
Seven. Kelly, how many you hit so far, man?
Two.
Still, that's two.
How many would I have if Jon Rahm didn't exist? Like six.
You'd probably be right there, yes.
This just in. He exists.
I've literally lost three where my guy finished second to Jon Rahm.
Okay. So you are, in terms of the PGA Tour, you are doing this via model, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, what I do, I look at a couple different things. The Wyndham Clark thing, he not only appeared on the model, but he really, for recent form, I think he had like three top sixes in his last five events. I actually thought I was going to get a winner on him in New Orleans when he teamed up with Bo Hosler at that team event, the Zurich Classic. They were the overnight leader after Saturday. Ended up, I think, finishing third or fifth. I can't remember, but nevertheless, they didn't win. So, yeah, I do like little stat modeling. I look at it. It varies from week to week. You know, so some week approach is more important. So some week off the tee is more important, or scrambling is more important. Coincidentally enough, Wyndham Clark, number one on both approach and scrambling this week. So it kind of worked out because that's the way it's run over the last few years at the Wells Fargo Championship. The guys that are really good in those categories tend to win this thing, and Wyndham Clark did yesterday.
By the way, Long Shots is the name of the golf podcast. Wes does that. So does Matt Brown. Matt Brown also had Wyndham Clark, Kelly Bidlin. The three of you guys do Long Shots each and every week.
Hey, I had Wyndham Clark too.
Oh, you, but
just a top 40 at plus 115.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kelly had him too, everybody.
Rest in peace, though, to the top 40 betting on Wyndham Clark, because that has been almost a go-to this whole year, Wes. Those prices now are going to be dramatically different. You're talking about, I've just pulled up his individual results at least this year. 37th at the Farmers, 10th at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, 33rd at the Genesis, 34th at the API, 27th at the Players, 5th at the Valspar, 6th at Punta Cana, and 29th at the RBC Heritage, making no more than $480,000 in any one of those. Tack on, what are you, 3.1 or
right.
2, something this
so
week?
What you point out, Kelly, it's not just stat modeling, it's also recent form. Yep. And then you're also looking at market a little bit, too, because the UK markets, they get their prices up first overseas on Monday morning. Like, you still have, people are still probably just putting up prices here in the States on Monday morning. That's why, you know, they kind of look and you see, okay, who gets bet early? Why did they get bet? So you are looking at market. It's no different than looking at, like, the Don Best screen for basketball or football or any of your day-to-day sports.
Well, betting. This is exactly what I wanted to get to, which is, again, for those who are newer to sports betting, there is, you know, what's the phrase we always use? There's so many ways to skin the cat here on this racket that we're in, and it's different from sport to sport. It's, you know, every tournament you look at differently, let's say in golf. Sometimes you rely on the models. For instance, the non-PGA tours, you're not modeling those, right?
No, not really, because those stats are not readily available.
Right.
Or you really, really got to search. And then sometimes the data is not accurate because they go all over the world. So, you know, you don't have like the one I use predominantly is Fantasy National. Pat Mayo and those guys, and then Kelly, Matt, and I know use Rick Gaiman's thing at Rick Run Good. Now that gives you a good estimate of some of the world events, of some of like the DP World Tour events or the LIV Golf events or Asian Tour. So, you know, you got to do like a little bit of mix and match, I think, to really do good modeling.
Well, I mean, but I think that's what's so fascinating. Were this so easy? Were this, oh, look at data, crunch data, there is your winner, then we'd have nothing to talk about.
Right.
This would be the easiest thing in the world. But it's always, there's something in the alchemy, right? And so you have to have that sort of, you know, it is more art than it is science.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's a little bit of both,
yeah.
Because, you know, half the battle is finding the information.
Right.
It's not just, you know, tabulating the information. You don't have to be some advanced mathematician. Like, if people read my piece at Visa.com every week, I say, okay, these are the important stats, and then I just list the numbers. You do what you want to from there. And that's what I basically do for our readers in that column. You know, I felt like, okay, this is what's going to matter this week. And sometimes it ends up not mattering. Sometimes it ends up being the complete opposite. But more often than not, at least that's going to give you some context.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said what you said, because the main point I do want to say, though, is beyond the fact that it is art, though, I think if you're doing this with no numbers, right, whatever the sport is you're talking about, whether it's golf, whether it's tennis, whatever it is, I think if you have no numbers to what you're doing, whether it's a model or not, you're probably doing this wrong.
Right.
You have to have some foundation.
Yeah, I think so. You have to be a little bit of everything. And look, I'm not some, you know, advanced mathematician. I wouldn't call myself Mr. Analytics, but I think that you have to use at least some of that. And then you have to combine that a little bit with market and a little bit with just instinct. I think you can do a little bit of everything, kind of a smorgasbord of the way that you do this, and that's kind of been my best approach.
Yeah, you don't have to be a numbers generator. You just should be a numbers understander.
Right. Exactly. And I think people kind of get bettors, especially newer bettors, get kind of intimidated by that. You know, they get intimidated like, oh, I don't know all this numbers, or I'm not smart enough to do this. Look, I'm no genius, but it just takes time to learn. And, you know, if people are patient with you, especially if somebody's teaching you this stuff, then you can succeed in this. But it's just picking up a little bit every day. You know, even in sports betting, I don't care if you've been at this 25 minutes or 25 years. You learn a little bit each day, and
absolutely.
It's kind of a saying I have, if you're not learning, you're not winning.
Yeah.
You constantly got to learn.
And that's, again, what we're sort of the elephant in the room, what we're talking about is there's also a lot of sniping from one side to the other. Again, if sports betting is this spectrum, the people who are the most analytically based will look at the more smoke and mirrors people and they will scoff.
Right.
The people who are more smoke and mirrors will look at the analytics people and they'll be like, oh, what are those numbers crunching me? You can't measure all of sports. And so we lose in that conversation that the answer is often in the middle somewhere, most often. And so you do have to, if you're being sort of cerebral about this, that's what it is. It's to temper both sides and to realize the strength of both approaches, and the shortcomings of both approaches as well. And certainly when it comes to golf, Wes and Matt and Kelly, they certainly have something figured out. Long Shots, the name of the podcast, wherever podcasts are available, VSiN.com/podcast might be the easiest way to find that one and all of our podcast. Wes's thoughts on the PGA and other sports that he's betting on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashing the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. And if you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800 Gambler. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody, good, bad, indifferent. Criticism, as long as you're funny, we don't care. We like to murder ourselves. Mm-hmm. Bill Hooker, any quarters opinions for Rome? Bill, not yet, but I will have them tomorrow on the show. Rome, again, the final 1,000 tournament prior to the French Open. Clay's biggest stage on the tennis tour. Judd O'Connor, touching on the Jokic scenario, if they suspend him, doesn't that set the precedent that owners will antagonize opposing teams' best players in efforts to get the suspended a game in the series? Well, Judd, the only problem with that is you can't really anticipate an owner sitting in the exact spot where they would get the ball and then antagonizing the other opponent. So I don't really think it sets much of a precedent. I just think it's this random event that happened.
I think it's a very random event,
yeah.
But I get what he's saying.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, Matt Ishbia, a former college basketball walk-on player?
Michigan State.
I mean, let's address a couple things. He knew exactly not to cough the ball up.
He flopped.
Jokic wanted to get that ball in and start running down the other court while the Suns player was down. He knew to hold on to that ball until someone made him give it up, and then he took a flop as well as anybody could in the NBA.
The precedent should be to fine him a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen.
More than what would equal $5 to you, correct. Like we brought up.
That's right. Chris Heath, Felica's audio is so clean, I hardly recognized his voice.
See, Chris, it looked great. Felica, it sounded great.
See what he said, Felica? Roger Jones, great to see Skill and Bin Laden reunited. Oh, we're trying to put that to bed. And then Buddhist Man, cash it 8 days later, 4 minutes into the show. Oh, I quoted Stats by Lopez. I was trying to have Stats Michael Lopez, who is the author at Stats by Lopez on Twitter, of the stat that, again, for 80% of teams to get through like they do in the NBA and postseason series, you'd have to play a best of 51 in hockey and a best of 75 in baseball. He works for the NFL now, and the NFL says we don't want to comment on other sports, so he couldn't come on the show to talk about it. Jesse Welch, thanks to the Long Shots pod, I've hit 5 of those outrights along with those guys. Just wanted to get the pod a little more marketing.
Damn. Good on you, Jesse.
We definitely don't run your guys commercial enough. Wait, it's never on the radio, your commercial.
I don't know if you're kidding or not. Bro,
it's on every 90 seconds. It's called Long Shots. It's bad to say. All right, I'll start this because I don't want to put it on you, but something came up off air. When I was gone for the week, and I saw this from afar, I didn't chime in on it, but I saw it from afar, but you brought it up off air, which is there was a bit of a gambling Twitter...
Kerfuffle.
It wasn't an old-fashioned Donnybrook.
Nope.
Fisticuffs. It was not a melee. There were no fisticuffs. It was a kerfuffle. That's exactly right, Wes. That's what it was. And there's our buddy Spanky, who had criticism, I guess, for Kay Adams, because Kay Adams from another network who was using the term plus 100 to describe a line. And I guess his position was, and I love Spanky and can't say enough great things about him, and I was part of Bet Bash too. I do happen to disagree with him on this, though, and I will tell you why. Because he was saying if it was a, I guess you'll tell me if I'm wrong on the paraphrase, basically if you use plus 100, it's a clear sign that you don't know what you're talking about. Because the way to properly say that is even money. Is that a good summation of it?
Yes.
You want me to do my thoughts first?
Well, you can go ahead. Yeah.
My thoughts on this are while I respect everything that he's saying, that as someone, and you can all of us can relate to this, when we do shows on this subject 5 days a week, there are always new listeners, and you can't assume that everybody is a in-the-know or old-school gambler. And so to use the terminology of plus 100 is actually the clearest and cleanest way to say that line so that people understand what you're saying. If you say even money, it leaves room for confusion for the listener. And so therefore, I will say plus 100. By the way, I thought I was on an island about this when watching this. And then I saw Steve Fezzik actually tweet. He said he thought he was on an island because the syndicates he's dealt with actually do use plus 100. So for me, as a trying to communicate, that's the way I choose to do it because it provides the least confusion. For Kay Adams to use it as someone who is probably, let's face it, she really probably is, and for all of her wonderful strengths, probably not the oldest school better. For her to use it, I would expect nothing less.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame her at all, because for her, I mean, goodness, if we extended one sort of cousin more on this, I would imagine she would absolutely use that for, because she's probably never heard the phrase even money to equate to the plus 100 anyway. Anyway, that's my thought. Just as someone who wants to convey to an audience on a daily basis, that's how I choose to go.
Well, and my thoughts on this, and look, I don't really know Spanky, so this is not against him. I use even money personally, or you could use plus a dollar. There's any ways you could do this differently. And with a new audience, like you mentioned, and new bettors coming into the market every day, people are going to say things differently, or people are not going to understand. It's like I use the example of the time when I worked in a sports book. I used to get frustrated when people would come and they want to bet $100. And it's like, do you want to bet $100 or do you want to win $100? And they don't understand. I've got the $100 bill and I'm ready to bet that if they win, they're going to get 90-90. And what you look at, the poor ticket writers behind the counter, they got to count out all that change, because it's not just a clean, okay, here's a $100 bill, here's the transaction, because they got to count that change. And then you got people behind there like, come on, come on, game's about to tip off, and they're trying to get the bet in. So you have new bettors not only with their phraseology, but in terms of how they bet too. And it takes a while to get educated, because nobody was educated out of the womb here.
Nobody.
In terms of sports
nobody
betting.
Was.
Everybody has to learn a little bit. Yep. So I thought, I thought plus a dollar or plus 100 or however you want to say it. I couldn't believe that this discussion was like, 4 or 5 days long on the Twitter. And there were people in those threads that made very good points. Like my buddy Jeff Davis, the junkyard down at Circa Sports, he goes, nobody ever says minus 100. And I was like, you know what? That's a fair point.
No, it is a fair point.
That's a fair point. But everybody has different nomenclature, if you will, in terms of how that they're going to say bets. I see it every weekend, especially for horse weekends, like a Kentucky Derby weekend.
For goodness
sakes,
yeah.
Right here at the South Point or anywhere where they were taking parimutuel bets, where you have people that don't, like, if they're betting a try, they don't say 3-4 with the 3-4-7 with the 3-4-7-8, which is nice and easy for a rider just to punch it in. There's your ticket, off you go. They say 3-4 trifecta wheel with the, key this, and they all say it a different way, and that can make it more confusing. I get it, but
I have a friend who's been betting for 30 years, when I say betting, I mean, hey, Gil, what are you betting right now? Oh, can I put $200 on that? Right. He hasn't learned anything in 30 years.
We all
if
have
I,
ones, yep.
We all have one of those, right? If I. What was your buddy's name?
Casey.
We all have a Casey.
He's one of the guys I'm talking about.
So we all have a Casey. So I'm just saying, if I said, hey, yeah, we're betting this even money, the follow-up question will always be 100% of the time, no matter how many times I give him the answer, he'll be like, I don't know what that means. And so I'd have to explain it to him.
Right.
So if I say plus 100, he gets that. That's all I'm saying. Just as a communication thing, you have to.
I think it makes a lot of sense. It's an interesting subject, though. These are how, as sports betting evolves and media evolves, right?
And that's no different than anybody that listens to our network or any other product in the space. There are some people, it's like, okay, Wes, Gil, who you like on the game? We like the Lakers. Click. And that's all they care about. And then you have a certain segment of bettors like, okay, you guys like the Lakers, why? And they'll stay around for the why. Some people don't care about the why. Everybody's different in this ever-growing space.
The other one I'll bring up real quick, since we're on our way out, rotation numbers. That is something I bet for a decade. Knowing what rotation numbers were, they didn't matter, though, with how I was betting. And then I moved to Vegas, and it's like, man, you guys are really demanding over this rotation number thing. Let me figure this out. Like, I just click a button on where I used to bet.
We got to run. Basketball bet tonight at all? You betting any of these
people? A couple props tonight in the Knicks Heat. I do like Julius Randle over his rebounds, and the inverse of that, Mitchell Robinson under his rebounds. What you're seeing now with Jimmy B back from Miami is he is driving the lane. So that got Mitchell Robinson in big-time foul trouble on Saturday. I think the same probably happens tonight in the late game. Lean Warriors plus 3.
Let's go, Dubs. Let's get this done. Tie that series up. Wes, always great to see you, man. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Gil.
And congratulations again.
Thank you, sir.
On not one, but two more futures, two more outrights in pocket for Wes Reynolds. We've done all we can do. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.